Okay, it's a Books of the Year podcast. It's our Q&A with David Nicholls. Our last podcast featured an extensive conversation with David about his new book, which is called You Are Here. So listen to that first. Well, you don't have to, I suppose. This is going to be...
It works either way.
The whole point of a standalone podcast is that you can enter and do this in any order. So time for a bit of Q&A then with you, David. Sure. What is the last... Fantastically, by the way, David Nicholls has all his answers on a very small yellow post-it note.
Yeah, folded up in my pocket.
It's absolutely... It looks as though that's done a 260-mile walk with you. That's what it looks like, and been rained on. What is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
Oh, I just finished it yesterday. I'd never read any Percival Everett, and I'm looking forward to reading the new one, but I thought The Trees was a really powerful, striking, amazing book. I mean, I put it down and thought, what a writer. And a very dark, strange book, unique, I think, in its tone, in the way it mixes brilliant, brilliant, brilliant comic dialogue with the darkest, starkest of material. And I was definitely taken aback by that book, shocked, but also laughing a lot. And it seemed to me completely original. And it's great to discover a new writer like that.
Who recommended it? How did you get there? Why did you pick it up?
I think it's sort of been in the air, hasn't it? Yeah, I've heard so many good things about Percival Everett, and so it felt like the right time. Yeah.
When it comes to your writing, are you a bit of a risk taker? This sort of touches on something we were talking about in the previous pod about whether you plan or whether you just do it off the cuff. How are you with risk?
Oh, it's interesting because I read that question. I had the questions in advance, and I thought, did they mean? I read it as, you know, do you challenge the form?
No, take it out however you want then. Okay, that's far more interesting.
Yeah. Do I challenge the form? And I really wanted to say yes. And I had to come around to the idea that probably I don't. You know, the novels are quite conventional in their style and form. You know, they're planned. They have a beginning, middle and end. The sentences, there's very little poetic or experimental writing in them. And that, maybe, and I felt a bit guilty about that. And then I thought maybe it's okay that a lot of what I read is more innovative and experimental and challenging. And if I were to try and write in a voice that wasn't my own, I could end up making terrible fool of myself. So probably there is something conventional in them. And at the same time, I guess if I'm taking any risks, it's just with how honest and frank I'm being about the emotions and the situations the characters find themselves in. You know, I do want them to feel quite emotionally raw. But I always hand in these books and think, God, I've written really something really quite dark and emotional here. And then people tell me they find them funny and warm, and I have to accept that's my voice, and maybe that's okay. The second interpretation of that question, I'm haunted by the idea of writer's block. I'm not sure it exists, but I don't want to find myself 50,000-60,000 words into a novel and not knowing where to go. So I don't take risks in terms of the process. I am pretty thorough. I do plan. I'm capable of finishing the novel, even if it isn't really working. I've only ever abandoned one book, and that was a real wrench. It was a year's work, and it was terrible. And it was me attempting to do what I was talking about earlier, to write something dark and experimental. And it was a terrible waste. But sometimes you need to do that. Take that chance to then move on to the next project, which hopefully will work better.
So just as an addendum to that, given your two characters were doing the Coast to Coast Walk, and I used to live in Cumbria, and I know plenty of people who've done the Coast to Coast Walk, and walkers who do it are roughly split into two kinds. One is the ones who have every route for every day planned out, and they know where they're going to be sleeping that night. And the others are the ones who go, when the sun sets, I will find a B&B, I will find a guest house, and it'll be fine. So given that you did that route, and given what you've just said, What kind of walker were you?
Well, you can probably guess. I had an itinerary and everything was booked several months in advance. I mean, there are stretches of the walk where it's quite hard to find accommodation. So I would strongly advise people to at least bring a tent and expect to find themselves, you know, a long way from somewhere to stay. I'm very safe. I have a physical map. I have my phone. I have devices, sat nav devices. I know where I'm staying. I know how far I'm walking. Sometimes I slightly overestimate what I can do in a day and get a little footsore. But and if the weather turns against you, it's quite a challenging walk. climbing up into Honister Pass in the terrible rain was an awful experience. But thankfully, you know, it was useful. It found its way into the novel.
Well, I think everyone will love the way Marnie swears at mountains. I'm sure they'll be cheering her on and probably having done the same thing. And speaking of weather, does the weather affect what you read or write?
It really does. You know, I was thinking about that. I'm very aware that often the seed of a novel is in a time of year. Sweet Sorrow, my last novel, was about the end of August. I wanted to get that feeling where you suddenly summer's slipped through your fingers and you haven't done what you wanted to do and the leaves are turning and you've got to go back to whatever is heading towards you in September. You've got to get back to normal life. And I wanted to capture that sense of melancholy, the melancholy of late summer. This book is about spring. It's about new beginnings at the end of winter, stepping out into the world, the world opening up, the weather gradually getting warmer. It's a much more hopeful book. Us was about the kind of the heat and tension of August in Europe. So often the time of year is very much there at the very beginning. So, yes, I don't know what's coming next. I haven't written a winter book, so maybe that's coming. Maybe a Christmas novel.
The best writer of songs about the end of summer. I was just, when you were talking, The Boys of Summer by Don Henley. Yeah. He writes, there is that melancholy feel that, you know, everyone thinks Boys of Summer, great, it's a summer song. Yeah, actually, it's kind of the end.
Minor key,
The whole point is that all the summer stuff has pretty much gone and look at what's left. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, there's a wonderful pulp song called David's Last Summer, which was very much on my notebook when I was starting Sweet Sorrow, about chilling drinks in the stream and the nights closing in and going to parties while it's still light outside. All of those lines really resonated with me and found their way into the mood of the novel.
Can you write anywhere? Do you need to have a little routine to be able to write, or a specific place?
I'm lucky enough to have an office which I can go to every day. I find it very hard to write if there's someone in the house. Yeah, I need to be alone, really.
Get out!
I'm trying to be creative. Anywhere in the house, so no one can be in the house.
No, I can edit, but I would find any noise, you know, people stomping around upstairs or the phone ringing, all of that I need to try and avoid. I never used to be like that. I used to write a lot in the British Library, in cafes. But in the same way that I used to be able to listen to music while I write, and I can't do that anymore. So I think something is happening to my brain, perhaps. It needs to be a little bit more monastic now. I can work anywhere, but by work I mean screenwriting, editing, admin. But writing prose, I need, it's pretty monkish, yeah.
How can you screenwrite and not write prose?
Well, screenwriting is much more about structure. And you might have a passage of dialogue or original speech which requires the same concentration you bring to a novel. But often screenwriting is moving things around or writing quite pragmatic descriptions of action. It's a much colder form, which doesn't mean I careless about it. I do get emotionally engaged. But fiction really comes from inside. And screenwriting, it's an instruction manual. And you're going to give it to people who are going to take it apart anyway, in a way that they never would with prose. So it's a little bit more technical and editorial than writing fiction. The first draft might have some of the same attributes as writing prose, but after that, it does become about moving blocks around.
Now, you'll need headphones for this, because we like to surprise our guests, if we can, with a question from a fellow author and fan. So here is a voice note from Jojo Moyes.
Hi, Simon, Matt, and hello, David. It's Jojo Moyes here, your former stablemate in publishing and friend. As you know, I'm a huge fan of your work, and I loved you were here. What I would love to know is, how do you build your characters? Are you someone who has to kind of work out who they are from the fingernails upwards, or do they just drop into your lap fully formed? Okay, have a lovely time. Bye.
Hi, Jojo. Jojo's great, and that's a very good question. And I guess the answer is...
You need to take your headphones off, because they're all colouring the microphone.
There we are. Thank you, Jojo. I guess the answer is, and it's really pretentious. I'm wary of giving this answer, but you know, I used to be an actor, and when you, I was a terrible actor, but when you train as an actor, you take this approach, which is knowing everything. You know, there's this technique in acting called hot seating, where a group of people sit around you and ask you, you know, what did your mum do for a living and what colour are your socks and what's your favourite food and all of that. And I do try and apply that kind of approach to writing a character. So I do need to know most things about them before I start writing them, because then the dialogue will flow. You know what their view of the world is. You know their take, their attitude, their physicality, their tone of voice, their vocabulary. So I do a lot of note-taking and improvising in the character's voice, which isn't to say the characters don't change. I mean, Michael, in the first draft of You Are Here, the last novel, was very, very, very dour and downbeat. And he didn't really have a sense of his own absurdity. And in the second draft, he became much more appealing, much more attractive, much more humorous, much more self-aware. And so there is a process of transformation. But before I start writing the novel, I try and iron out all the inconsistencies, which means that sometimes the first draft, the characters are a little too big. You know, they have these attributes which you're nailing onto every page in a way that isn't very subtle. So I try and, in the second draft, put in some contradictions and some surprises.
So I didn't know you used to be an actor. So did you study drama at uni?
Yeah, I did ancient drama. Then I studied acting in New York for all the good it did me. And then I worked on and off as an actor, mostly off, for about 8 years, yeah.
Wow. So if you were to go back to uni to study a course other than English and drama, what would you choose?
I do the same. I did English and drama at Bristol, and it was completely life-changing for me. It was an amazing experience. I made lots of terrible mistakes, made a fool of myself all the time, but I got so much out of it. This time, though, I would take the English element more seriously. When I was there, I was so swept up in putting on plays and getting involved in that, the extracurricular acting stuff, that I kind of was slightly dismissive of George Eliot and Jane Austen, and I didn't pay them as much attention as I would now. If I was to go back now, I think I would probably skip the plays and really throw myself into the literature.
We've touched a bit on screenplays and screenwriting. Do you have a favourite screen adaptation of a book, not yours specifically?
Yeah, obviously.
I'm going to choose two, if that's okay, because I wanted to kind of think about different approaches. And the first approach is the screen adaptation of A Room with a View, which I think is pretty much a perfect adaptation. I mean, it's extremely faithful, absolutely captures the flavour of the novel, and is immaculate. I can't imagine it ever being improved upon. And then I wanted to take a different approach and think about Jonathan Glazer's adaptation of Under the Skin by Michel Farber, which is a novel that I read and kind of really wanted to adapt. But what he does with the text is absolutely magnificent. He takes the bare bones of the idea and then transforms it completely. It has very, very, very little in common with the novel, just the Scottish setting and an atmosphere. He makes so many brilliant changes and comes up with something that I think is, you know, the equal of the novel, while at the same time taking an entirely different approach. I think he does the same thing with Zone of Interest, using the novel as a jumping off point. And that seems to me to be another really interesting attitude to adaptation.
Do you work well with deadlines? Some people enjoy having that sort of time limit. Others basically watch them whiz by.
No, I'm very good. I'm very diligent. Yeah, I'm afraid I'm a real swot. I get it in on time. And with screenwriting, that's essential because, you know, they're waiting for you.
Yeah.
They really are waiting for you to budget and plan. But with novels as well, I like to have that tension. I like to get my homework in on time.
Even more inexcusable, therefore, that it took them so long to get back to you once you'd handed this in the first place. I would be demanding it back in days.
They let me know that, you know, conversations were happening. It wasn't complete silence, but it was the right approach.
So you're throwing a fantasy dinner party. You can invite three authors, living or dead. Who's coming?
Well, you know, often it's not your favourite writers, isn't it? It occurred to me that I really love Dickens, and Dickens would be a disaster, and Scott Fitzgerald would be a mess. And so I wanted to choose some writers whose work I love, but who maybe have a sensibility that would work well.
Yeah.
Dinner.
You might get on with each other.
Yeah. So I chose Helen Garner, who's an Australian writer I really admire. And she's very forthright, very funny, has amazing stories to tell. A brilliant, brilliant writer. Writer of a small handful of novels, but they're wonderful novels, each of them different. And I think she's very underrated. And she's fearless and funny and bold and a great, great writer. I'd be thrilled to meet her. Then I thought of Chekhov. I'm presuming he'd be able to speak fluent English, but you know, someone I've loved for years, writer of my favourite play, and in his letters, a very wise, funny, interesting character. So someone I really admire. And then I thought, again, I've just been reading the letters, and the letters of Seamus Heaney show him to be really warm, supportive of his fellow writers, full of stories, kind. I met him once very briefly at a wedding and I was so tongue-tied I didn't know what to say because I'm a huge fan. But I'd like him to come back for the dinner party.
So Seamus Heaney, Chekhov, Anton Chekhov and Helen Garner.
That's it, yeah.
And you, obviously.
Yeah.
Me, yeah. I'd let them get on with it, I think. I'd probably be a bit self-conscious in that company.
David, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for joining us. You Are Here is published by Scepter and is out now. Remember, if you want to get in touch, you can email booksoftheyear@yahoo.com or go via our socials. We'll be back next week, depending on whether the author turns up or not.
That'll be good.
Hope you can join us then.